This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconex. Visit them today at uconex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that Season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by the CMOCouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter, and with me today co-hosting is Stacy Horton. Stacy, it's lovely to have you. Listen, I'm excited about this episode. We started this last year, and what we decided to do was kind of a bit of a recap episode as we start to kick off Season 3, which is really exciting for us. And so in doing so, what we do is we bring back one of our favorite guests, somebody who we know won't be shy on the microphone. We talk a little bit about some of the highlights of last season. We get a chance to kind of catch up with that guest. And then we talk a little bit about what's coming up on Season 3, which it's going to be hard to top Season 2. We had a pretty amazing lineup of guests, but we're excited that we've got some great people lined up. And so with me today is Sri Rajagopalam. Sri is currently the SVP of e-commerce and digital sales for Revlon. Since its launch in 1932, Revlon has provided consumers with high-quality product, innovation, and performance, and it remains a beauty trendsetter in the world of color cosmetics and hair care. Sri, how did I do? Welcome back to the show.
One of your favorite guests. I think I must have worn my Air Maxes that day. I must have done something right.
It's amazing when you can enjoy your life and enjoy your kids and your family, and ultimately, to some extent, that's kind of what it's all about, hopefully, right?
Can't reiterate that one more time. First of all, I'm honored that Stacy and you have had me back to actually launch Season 3.
It is. This will be
cool. I am genuinely honored, man. To earn that favorite title, I must have done something.
And you were also kind enough to bring some stuff from Revlon. And you've been there for how long now? Because I think it's been maybe 6 months?
This is the third month anniversary day, the 29th of August.
And so you were kind enough to bring some gifts. And Stacy,
I love this.
Please don't humble me, but I got a Elizabeth Arden story for you.
Please.
I think my destiny with Revlon was kind of made to be, and this is really funny. When I got to this country first, I went to school at Virginia Tech down in Virginia. And I remember my organizational behavior class, Professor Markham. This is in the early 90s. I won't give you an exact date. I don't want it dated now. But I'm a young man, just like you, Sean.
Absolutely.
We're in the 35s. So I remember in our organizational behavior class, we had to pick a favorite idol and write a one-pager, you know, classic business school assignment. And while everybody picked some of the sports legends of the time, the entertainment wizards of the time, and business legends, I don't know why, while researching the library, this is before Google and iPhones and things of that nature, I picked up Elizabeth Arden, and I wrote a one-pager on her. And I remember Professor Markham gave me an A and an extra credit because he said it was the most unique choice I had ever picked. And I found it fascinating because, to my knowledge, she was the first one to truly scale a fragrance brand and a fashion icon at that time, other than maybe the only other one was Anderson Cooper's mom, Gloria Vanderbilt. Yeah. And 23 years later, I had forgotten about that incident, and I was at Virginia Tech a couple of weeks ago because it so happens that Revlon's production facilities, Roanoke, Virginia, which was the airport we would land and take off from for Virginia Tech. So I decided to visit. Who did I meet?
Really?
Destiny. And we talked about Elizabeth Arden. I'm like, holy cow, what are the odds?
That's crazy.
And here we are.
It does come full circle sometimes. You know, I think the thing that I know you're charged with to some extent is taking some legacy brands, and obviously, to Stacy's point, there's some historical that sometimes comes with that. I mean, all of us have a mom or a grandmother or somebody who, you know, that scent or that smell that you remember and you think of. And certainly that, you know, that transitions to now your wife and your daughter Life does come full circle.
1,000%. I think when brands are strong, they have the efficacies that they have a conversation with consumers on, and they deliver on the promises that are set out to be on day one, whether it's legacy, whether it's new, it doesn't matter. What happens over the course of time is maybe a lot of brands lose the ability to connect with the consumers in the way that consumers want them to. And my journey is pretty straightforward. Connect a awesome brand with awesome consumers, keep everybody happy, and deliver on the efficacies we promise.
And that brings us certainly back to the point in some ways of this recap show, which is to talk about some of the guests that we had last year. And that point that you just made really was the point that our season opener guest from Levi's, made when Jen Say came on, and she talked about just the legacy of Levi's and how long it's been a brand, and how they've adjusted over time. And really, to your point, they've found their voice. And by doing so, it's allowed them to stay relevant to consumers. And they're probably just as relevant today as they've ever been.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. And I think what's particularly compelling about it is we've done it by leading with our values. Not that we don't have the greatest jeans in the world. We do, whether you want to.
They're very comfortable, I can tell you, Stacey. They are very comfortable.
And cool.
No debate. And I'm reminded also on top of that is episodes 13 and 14. I think you had me on an episode 13, but what are the odds that you'd have two Sri Lankan born dudes, Jackson and me, 13 and 14 back to back? I mean, it's never happened to me in history. It's back to back on something with another Sri Lankan dude. But the reason I brought that one up is because I remember legacy brands. He talked about the importance of performance marketing. And if a legacy brand can make that left turn, understand what performance marketing is, dynamic for the modern times, because literally you can dynamically adjust your marketing in today's day and time, you will no longer be a legacy brand. You will be a brand that's awesome and rocks.
Old Spice was great because before that campaign, if you remember, which you and I do, maybe your son doesn't, Old Spice was your dad, maybe granddad's cologne, and they didn't even make cologne. It was just such an archaic brand. Even though it was like number two or number three in the market for APDO, then Wyden came up with an amazing creative, did two creatives around it, the TV spots, and then the videos, the 225 videos in 2 days, which my team was a part of.
Oh, that's interesting.
We just did the social piece, so we're monitoring social media, identifying conversations, handling some of the crises that came about.
Did you say that was a Wheaton and Kennedy campaign?
Yeah, their strategy, their creative. We just executed the social with them.
It is amazing in today's world where everybody is a marketer. Everybody feels like they know how to create content and put, you know, change a brand out. We were talking earlier today just about season two in general. It was I almost consider it kind of our an international season. I think we had, you know, people literally from five or six continents or countries on that season. And so unbeknownst to us, that kind of ended up becoming the theme of the season to some extent. And I think what we're trying to figure out for this season as we start to work our way through it is, you know, what will that theme be? Will it be something that we establish, or will it be something that just gets established over time? One of the things that we're trying to make sure that we weave into some of this conversation is just hope. And so that theme of hope is that one of the things that I feel like as I hear back from people who listen to the show, and whether they're a CMO or a marketer in general, or they're a VP of marketing, is that many of our guests last year helped them to realize that that even though this is hard and even though it's tricky, that there's a club, and you're all part of that group to some extent, and that you can lean on each other, and that you can lean on each other for advice or insight or just knowledge and understanding, that all of us that are in any of those positions realize this, it's not easy. And there's
Sean,
a lot of work to do.
What you're alluding to is a very important value that people need to have, which is I hate to use the word networking because it gets misconstrued. I would say just human touch and human intervention. And one of the ways people do that is I'm here with you today.
Yeah.
And we're getting to know each other better every time we meet up. Now we're exchanging LinkedIn messages. And congratulations, you and I have actually passed to email and Facebook messages still.
That's pretty crazy,
isn't it? That's
called
networking at its best, brother.
Well, and it helps you bring that personal aspect into this. You know,
1,000%.
We all have a job to do. We're all out there selling, no matter what your job is. There's a selling aspect to it. But if you can come to it with a point of authenticity, and if you can talk to people like they're normal human beings, then I think you have an opportunity to just figure out what some of this is all about. One of the guests last year that I felt like really did an amazing job with that was Fernando Machado. So he's CMO for Burger King. He's all over everything. I mean, he's on Instagram.
You took the words out of my mouth because I distinctly remember in the start of that podcast, Fernando referring to in dire times what he leans back on. And he did talk about his first experience working in a factory in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
And how working in a factory versus being a CMO today, he always goes back to the values he learned in the factory, which is understanding business ground up to solve problems.
And I got an internship in Unilever in a factory. So I worked for 2 years in the shop floor of a factory in Sao Paulo.
So that's interesting because you ended up at Unilever in the marketing department.
I just stayed.
Yeah.
Like, so the first time I've heard the word marketing, I was in the factory. The marketing team came to do a presentation about one of our key laundry detergent brands that we used to produce in the factory. And I went to the presentation and I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. You know, like there is a big world out there. Like they do advertising, they do design, and they love drawing. And like, I think I consider myself like creative. And they also do the business side of life, and I'm good with numbers. So maybe I can do better at something that kind of like takes the most out of both sides of my brain.
Isn't it weird to think about that day, how much one single day can really impact and change your entire trajectory?
Look, I didn't know what an MBA was. I didn't know what marketing was. I didn't know who Philip Kotler was. I knew nothing. But what I felt was that there was something there that maybe I could do well, and it would probably be more interesting than the stuff I was doing in the factory.
And I hear a lot about that episode. I hear a lot of people first say, how in the world did you get him to be on the show? I told them I had to go to him, which was in Miami, which was fine. We're actually hoping to get a chance to go back there again this year and get a chance to interview
him. I would have thought it would have been as easy as getting him those double fried French fries.
Listen, it's not the fries for those guys. It's the Impossible Burger. That's the thing that makes it almost impossible. Now you got Popeyes out there. You can't get their chicken sandwiches or something. So I loved having him on that episode.
A couple of things that came to mind for me are some profound quotes that I'm trying to practice in everyday life. One of them was from episode 5. I can't remember who the guest was, where they talked about literally quoting, "I don't prepare for a presentation. I prepare for a conversation," which I thought was very impactful in my life. And I think I try to live my life that way. And then Gail Toberman, very much here from iHeart. The value of a podcast, what you're doing, is the connection between everyday life and storytelling. And if you just think about what we've done in the last few minutes, that's exactly what we've done, our everyday lives. You're here, I'm here. I work for Revlon. I'm doing a bunch of other things. You're doing a bunch. This is not your day job. I know you say that every single episode. I know that I have that memorized for now, but that's what life's about, creating hope. Everyday life, storytelling, connecting it to awesome things.
Audio is so much more flexible than video, right? I remember planning TV production.
We never should have started shooting on video, Philip. For the love of God, just the editing alone on this.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you think about advertising, you know, locations and casting and wardrobe and, you know, edits and shoots and trying to get to that one perfect cut. I mean, you know, when I was at Microsoft, you could take a big global brand, right, Windows, and, you know, we'd be shooting something like maybe 6 TV spots for an entire campaign for 31 countries.
That's insane.
And you know what I could tell you? Like, that home that we were trying to make look like 31 countries didn't look right for anyone, right? Nothing was exactly right. But if I said to you in audio, I said, hey, picture yourself at home with the kids last night.
You're there.
You're there.
So one of the episodes we did last year was with Josh Golden, who's the publisher over at Ad Age. And, you know, between the people that he knows, obviously in the position that he's in, but even talking about Gail and then a friend of mine, Jennifer Frommer over at Sony, they all know each other sometime. And Stacey and I were actually having this conversation when we were out last night, you know, that it is a small group in some ways, but it can be a very
welcoming. And the reason I wasn't invited to the party?
It was a birthday dinner for the two of us.
That's right.
Whose birthday?
Both of ours.
Both of us.
Congratulations, guys. Burgos. Happy birthday to both of you.
I wish they'd start going backwards.
I'm honored I'm sitting here with you on birthday week.
It's been fun.
Speaking of Josh, though.
Please.
Two things that I, again, distinctly remember from that episode that Josh mentioned. One of them is, I think you asked him if there was one thing in life, what would he want? And he said, coding. And I think there was literally...
You're right.
Mr. Sean Halter actually had a 5-second pause in life. How did that happen?
I was asking about what you wanted to, what you knew more about. You're telling me coding.
Coding. So I think that that's the
thing. We got hung up on homunculus.
Sorry. I want to learn how to be better at what I believe will be such something critical in the future so that I, not unlike some marketers and brand people that are slightly older than myself are thinking what's a DFP and they get concerned about that. I don't want to feel that concern about coding so that I can be aware of how to use a computer and make my own app or whatever.
Another thing that I remember he said, which is very marketing centric, that I truly am trying to embrace, understand, and play out in real life is biddable programmatic going in-house. Big one.
When we built Uconnex, which is one of the sponsors of this show, when we built that 5 years ago and we took out our first round of VC funding for a company, that's the space they live in. They help onboard teams for brands that are looking to in-house and or trying to transition between their agency to the in-house piece of it. They provide biddable media traders for just that reason, because the level of transparency that most brands need these days is at a level that some agencies just, they're not sure actually how to get there. And that company was actually born from the fact that we own a traditional agency and we couldn't find it. We couldn't find somebody who would actually show us what was happening, which I'm going to help with a transition with that, which is to talk about season three for just a second, if you don't mind. And the fact that one of the guests that we'll have on this season, coming up in season three, the senior vice president of marketing for the Trade Desk, one of the largest trading platform providers that are out there. And he and I will spend some time really digging into what biddable is a little bit, how brands are using it, what does it mean, what does it not mean, and hopefully some CMOs that are still kind of trying to navigate it a little bit will be able to take some things.
Tell me they have a patent on what they do, because Dean Harris said so from the last season. CBD guy.
I talk to Dean pretty regularly right now. I have two emails in my inbox from him. He's with Tab Brands. He had a great story about the Timex and takes a licking to keep on ticking and living in New York.
Interestingly, my grandfather's big claim to fame in the advertising world is he did the Timex campaign. So my grandfather my grandfather was, it takes the licking and keeps on ticking.
Really?
Yes, really. So
I
didn't wear my Timex today, but I do have
I won't tell him. I won't tell him. I'm sure he's probably watching up in heaven and he's probably being why in the world didn't you wear your Timex? They're going to tell a great story. Get reflective. You know, you realize a year ago, I didn't know most of these people. And within just that short period of time, to me, that's what content can sometimes allow you to do. It can allow you to kind of break down
some walls. Sean, you may not know, but you guys are doing an awesome thing over here, which is you're connecting people, by getting people to listen to the messages you guys have on a routine basis through these episodes and seasons, et cetera. You're also coaching the industry, no matter whether it's CPG. Of course, I come from CPG, but you have a variety of guests across the plethora and spectrum of industries. You're coaching everybody to move into the modern times when it comes to marketing. It's an invaluable service and value you're providing to the industry. So I want to thank you, but I decided to throw in an Easter egg for Law Smith from episode 8, where you guys were debating, 8 or 9, I can't remember.
He was down with me with Fernando.
Does he get credit for helping you start the show?
No, he thinks it's so funny.
You said 25% Law Smith, here's your Easter egg, brother, you get 100. Yes. Which on?
So Law Smith, the buddy of mine.
I got you beat on my memory of the last season.
I know, that's so funny. Really, Amal from one of our companies really is the one who helped kind of just repush me back into this direction. And I'll be
honest
with you, it's hard. You know, Stacy and I, again, we're having this conversation. You know, it takes time. You come, you bring guests in, you hope that they see value in the show. You hope that your listeners see value in the show. And then sometimes you leave on this amazing high and you have to go back to your real job. And, you know, your phone is filled with texts of like, you know, somebody didn't show up at the office today, or this client's upset about this. But to me, I think as I'm figuring out what does my next 10 years look like, I think the goal for me is to continue to just be as authentic as you can be, really, to provide some content that I find value in, and hopefully
1,000%, because that's how you're providing hope.
Meet marketers that can help me be a better marketer myself.
I can tell you categorically what you guys do, and just getting people to speak what's on their mind. Being fearless over here, both of you included, and sharing this with the industry is absolutely invaluable. And without stuff like that, again, you started the show by referring to hope. That's what hope's about. Learning how to be bold, speaking the truth, connecting the dots, connecting people, shooting for the future.
Stay connected, right? Network. Absolutely. And stay connected. There are no mistakes. The people you meet one conversation away from maybe a new position or building a team.
One conversation from destiny.
The last part that I'll say about season two, and then we can talk a tiny bit about season three and catch up on anything you want, is we also try to have a pretty wide variety of kinds of guests. It is called the CMO Suite. We want to make sure that we have, you know, a fair amount of CMOs and VPs of marketing, but we wanted to bring in some other people as well that maybe CMOs don't get a chance to hear from enough or don't understand what they do. One of my favorite guests from last year was Scott Griffith, the CFO of marketing for Farmers. And again, Scott Griffiths and I have talked several times. I've helped with some people who wanted the chance to meet him. And I've had some really great, authentic, real conversations with him that aren't wrapped around us trying to sell him anything.
I mean, we start with the customer and the environment and kind of work backwards from that. So, you know, we did, as I mentioned, the first thing we did was segment the market and figure out our customers. We do that regularly, periodically, because things are changing. People's willingness to switch insurance companies, people, what they want from an insurance company, what they have to insure, you know, where they're living. You know, more people are living outside in the suburbs, and, you know, people are now working remotely, working at home, and all of these things. So we need to understand the worst thing that we can do is assume that we know what the customer wants and needs. The only way we're going to know is to tell them, you know, for them to tell us. And the only way we're going to know that is by asking them.
Rich. Antoniello was definitely one of my favorite guests of last year over at Complex. Love that guy to death. Always has an opinion.
Not just marketing itself or not just media and advertising, but really everything is now constant iteration, right? Because you're constantly looking for differentiation. Everything is crowded. There's hardly any white space anymore. And if you're not, the learning and the self-evaluation is really driving towards iteration to create unfair advantages across the board. I mean, it's a very simple concept. It's just a lot of people are very afraid of change, very afraid of self-evaluation, and they want the results that you get from acting that way without acting that way. So it's the height of irony.
I got a chance to meet somebody who was really an idol of mine, which was Alex Boguski. When I first got into this business, Crispin Porter Boguski was an agency that I looked up to. I had the chance to actually go to their offices in Miami one time, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So to have my life come full circle, to not only get a chance to meet him, but to be able to interview him last season and be able to interview him in his own podcast studio, that was so incredibly rich and kind. And again, that was one of those pinch me moments.
Your kids are 14?
They're 15. Twin 15-year-olds.
My son ran away from home when he was 14.
How was that?
Terrible. Like,
how long was he gone?
Terrifying.
A couple hours?
No, like 3 days, 3 to 4 days.
Really?
Yeah, it was for real, you know.
What created that moment?
Well, I feel like I was putting, he felt like I was putting pressure on him. School, right? I felt like I didn't have a more casual gear that I could slip into. Like, you know, I was like, I barely care. But the reality was, I was, and I am excellent at silent judgment, which is just.
Are you judging
bad.
Me right now?
No, yeah. I'm not.
So he was feeling judged.
He was, and feeling a lot of pressure. He ran away. You know, we looked into like, how do you deal with a situation like this? His mother's Latin. She's really mad, like not dead to
there's
me
no
mad.
There's a stereotype
but,
to it, but there's a one and maybe a nine. It seems like it jumps.
She was
fast.
She was hot, and so
did she feel like it was your fault?
No, she wasn't mad at me. Mad at
she
him.
Just hot.
Yeah. But he left a note, and then we didn't hear from him. And finally, I was texting. And I was like, "We got to call the police if we don't hear that you're safe." And I, you know, he said he was safe. So we went. Didn't know where he was, but we knew he was safe. And then next day I was like, if and when you want to come back, we can talk about how that looks. Yeah. Cause we went on the Google and we researched what are you supposed to do with runaways.
What did he tell you?
What did he say? Or
no, what did
the Google?
You? What do you feel like
you've
the
got
Google
to negotiate. You don't just get to come back. There's like a negotiation. And it wound up being incredibly positive because what we realized and what I realized was there was all these silent or unwritten deals that I thought we were in, right? But he didn't know what the deal was because he never made the deal.
Yeah, you made them.
I made the deal, and I made it when he was seven, and then we continued to be in that deal. And so there were a lot of lot of things that came out of that. And now we're, you know, we're best buds. So it was incredibly positive. And then we, everything that was unwritten, we essentially didn't write it down, but it was like the reason why we, oh, I'll give you one other thing that came out of it. I used to try to motivate him with what I now call the tale of woe. You know, if you don't get good grades in school, you won't get in the right colleges. If you don't get in the right colleges, life's just harder. If you, you know, if life's hard, you could wind up, you know, homeless down by the river. Right. And, I had this epiphany. I was like, I've never motivated an employee like that. Like, why am I using that on my son? And so I flipped it. I said, well, what I do with people is like, what is your wildest, you know, idea of success? What does that look like? And so I said, what would you like, forget jobs. If you could be doing anything, this is the question I think everyone should be asking. You could do anything and you can, what would you do? And he said, oh, I'd like to be in sort of an artist co-op. We'd make music. We'd do the visuals, the video, you know, the whole thing. And I said, I don't know what that is, but it sounds really cool. I might want to do that too. But what do you need to, like, what skills would you need to get between here and there? And then he kind of mapped it out and then went to art school. And, you know, that's no longer the dream, but it started that process, right?
We're going to wrap it here because we're running out of time. Normally, we're trying to get the guest to cry. I'm literally tearing up here. That was such an incredible story. That was just an incredible story.
Bonin,
how you doing, man?
He's a pretty incredible dude. And if you can catch him for 5 minutes, then you're lucky because it's hard to catch him sometimes.
Back in PepsiCo days, we actually worked together. I think he was in the social communication side when I was in field sales.
Yeah,
customer sales.
That was an episode where I wish I had booked even more time with him because we got a half an hour in and literally that was all the time I had with him and we'd barely scratched the surface.
What do you wish you knew more about? What's the thing this year that you're like, you wish you could see ahead?
What is in the future? No, I like the journey. What do I wish I knew more about? I wish I spent more time in space.
In space, like actual.
Yeah, so I promised myself that by 50, my retirement career would be space tourism. And to be honest with you, I don't feel like we're laying the groundwork from an investment standpoint in these businesses, but I don't know if I'm closing the knowledge gap. I used to be on the board of a company called Made in Space, which was the first 3D printer to print in space. And so I felt close and I used to be able to go. I was a young astronaut growing up.
Have you met Elon?
I met Elon. I've also met Buzz Aldrin. Which I love Elon, but Buzz is a little bit more of a. I've met Buzz like 4 times.
Season 3 is here. We can. I'm sure
you can never know.
Back.
We might be able to go back.
Yes, sir.
And then the last guest was actually an intro from Bonin, which was incredibly kind of him to do so. Michael Loeb helped us close out the season last year. I think one of the things I really took away from that episode was again, it's okay to fail. It's okay to be fired. It's okay to stand for your principles. And he did a pretty amazing job of just kind of shrugging that off sometimes and saying, it's okay. You just get back up.
I think that if the new generation will allow themselves to learn from the people who came before them and vice versa, that actually is the winning combination.
My hope is that my path gets to cross with his again. We talked a bit about some of the brands he works with. And to your point, why can't we do more of these? We talked about maybe trying to do some corporate podcasts for some of the brands that he works with. And I'd love nothing more than to be able to spend more time with him.
I just
incredibly
feel
brilliant.
That if someone hasn't failed in life once, just in everyday life, just things that they do, ventures that they start, ideas that they have, they miss out on the ability to understand what the audacity of hope is. If you've never failed, you just don't know any better. Audacity of hope, brother, going back
audacity
to the future.
Of hope.
I like it.
As we go into season 3, we've got quite a few guests that we'll spend some time talking about just that. We'll have several that are in the CPG space, including Eduardo Luz, who came over from Kraft Heinz and is now at a company called 8Greens. You actually just got a chance to meet him as you were walking
in.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
A really interesting guy moving up from the CMO position into a CEO position. We've got Heidi Browning, who's the CMO for the NHL. She'll be coming up this season. She'll actually be our first official guest of the season. She'll be our kickoff episode after we do this recap episode. We appreciate you coming on and helping us kind of hit some of the highlights along the way.
I, for one, will be eagerly looking forward on my 6:30 p.m. train rides back from Land's End here in Manhattan.
Listen, Sri Rajagopalan, we really appreciate you coming back. coming up into the studio again, spending some time with us. If you missed anything from season two, they're all there, guys. All you have to do is go to thecmosuite.com, check them out, listen to them on iTunes, on Spotify, on iHeart. Kat, please take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.